We're off to the races, powered by The Racing Biz, your independent voice for Mid-Atlantic racing and breeding. On the web at www.theracingbiz.com. And on the radio every Saturday morning, it's Off to the Races. Here's your host.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Off to the Races Radio, powered by The Racing Biz. Thanks so much for spending a little bit of your Saturday morning with us. We do appreciate it. My name is Frank Vespi, and for the next 60 minutes, we're going to be talking thoroughbred racing and breeding in Maryland, across the Mid-Atlantic, and around the country. Our show, as always, powered by The Racing Biz. TheRacingBiz.com is the website. Got the social media. Sure, we got that. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Look for at The Racing Biz. Also, you can pick up a free mobile app, our free mobile app for your Apple and Android devices. You can always be up to the minute with the latest news and info on Mid-Atlantic racing and breeding on your handy-dandy mobile device. Great show teed up today. Gonna talk with Teresa Gennaro in just a couple minutes. A little bit of a historical perspective on changes in the Triple Crown. There's been some chatter about that in the last couple weeks. And while a lot of us perceive the current configuration of the Triple Crown series as kind of handed down from on high and written in stone, Teresa's going to tell us that history tells us something a little bit different. Interesting conversation coming up with her. Also going to visit with Colonial Downs track announcer Jason Beam. He's going to be coming up at 20 past the hour thereabouts. And Colonial reaches the end of its 2023 racing season today. Today's the running of the Grade 3 Virginia Derby. That's the closing day feature. And fun conversation with Jason. You'll want to check that out. We're going to preview the races a little bit, chat about being a track announcer, and just kind of catch up on some things. Also, it's track announcer day here on Off to the Races. Maryland track announcer Dave Rodman going to be in the house. Dave and I manned the helms at the Big T today over during the Timonium meet the past couple weeks. So Dave will come visit with us, recap Timonium a little bit. Also, preview, there are three stakes at Pimlico tomorrow, Sunday. Three stakes at Pimlico. Dave going to preview that. Also, legal matters. Interesting recent legal case came out, and we'll do legal matters with Richard Hackerman. He's going to join us. He'll be on at 35 or 40 past the hour to tell us about that case and what it might mean for horse owners in general. So a lot of stuff going on there. Want to thank our program supporters. Those include the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, Wanamakers.com online horse auction site, True Valor, the stallion standing at Northview Stallion Station, and Richard Hackerman, attorney at law. Thanks so much, guys. We very much appreciate your support. Okay, let's get right down to it. In recent weeks, we've had quite a bit of chatter about the configuration of the Triple Crown. A couple of weeks back, Aiden Butler of First Racing, which is the parent company of the Maryland Jockey Club, which owns Laurel and Pimlico, proposed shifting the dates of the Preakness, shifting the Preakness to 4 weeks away from the Kentucky Derby rather than two, a move that the company certainly hopes would encourage more horsemen to run back from the Derby in the Preakness. Now, more recently, just this past week or so, NYRA, which operates the major tracks in New York, they're going to be doing work on Belmont Park for quite a while. They're basically going to knock down the grandstand at Belmont and replace it with something much smaller and more modern and more sort of attuned to the modern racing landscape. But that means that the Belmont Stakes will not be able to run at Belmont Park, and they are proposing to run it at Saratoga, which would likely lead to it also being run at a mile and a quarter rather than a mile and a half. It's, well, let's say seemingly traditional distance, because our next guest is going to tell us a little bit more about kind of what is the tradition of the Triple Crown. We perceive it the way it's been in recent years, which is the Kentucky Derby on the first Saturday in May, then 2 weeks later the Preakness, then 3 weeks later the Belmont Stakes with distances of a mile and a quarter for the Derby, a mile and 3/16 for the Preakness. and a mile and a half for the Belmont. But our next guest, Teresa Gennaro, is going to tell us that's not really much of a tradition at all. In fact, the tradition is more the changes in the Triple Crown. She's written an article on theracingbiz.com about it called Reconfigured Triple Crown, a Tradition of Its Own. And here's my conversation with Teresa Gennaro. Teresa, thanks for joining me here on Off to the Races. Let's start with kind of just the facts here. Tell us about why NYRA is going to need to change the distance of the Belmont Stakes.
Well, because it will not be taking place on Belmont Park's mile and a half oval because of the renovations that are happening at Belmont, which include allowing access to the infield and tearing down the current grandstand and clubhouse and replacing them with something much smaller. It seems unlikely that any of that Belmont Park in a position to have any racing at all, much less the Belmont Stakes, for definitely next year and possibly the year after, so 2024 and 2025. There is some, you know, Saratoga is a mile and an eighth. It seems if you left the finish line where it was, then you would have horses basically starting on a turn, which is certainly not ideal. But I still feel like maybe, you know, if you fiddled with the finish line a little bit, you might be able to do a mile and a half there. And I don't think any of this is completely determined at this point, but it seems that those logistics mean that we might have another shortened Belmont as we did just a few years ago in 2020.
Yes, in the COVID year, exactly.
Yep.
I'm curious, is there... I've seen a lot of horse racing people response. Is there a kind of New York City or Long Island response? I mean, do people care?
No, I don't think so. No. Not that I've seen. I mean, most of the reaction I've seen have been in horse racing centric fora like Facebook and Twitter and other social media and in conversations with people. But it doesn't seem like the general public is aware of this in any significant way.
Now, we've also had Aidan Butler from the Stronach Group, First Racing, which owns the Maryland Jockey Club, has proposed lengthening the time between the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness, which is another potential change to the Triple Crown, and which has been something of an evergreen conversation. But what does history tell us about the configuration of the Triple Crown?
That it was mostly accidental over and over and over again. You know, the first quote-unquote Triple Crown winner was Sir Barton back in 1919. His Belmont was run at 1 3/8 miles, so shorter than the, you know, again, quote-unquote traditional 12 furlong distance. But the race was that series of races wasn't even called the Triple Crown then. I mean, that was a media construction, not a racing construction. It was never conceived officially to be a deliberate, thought out series of races that would allow a special, exceptional horse to prove him or herself. And I think that we can see that by looking at the current configuration, where you have a bizarre distance progression, where you have the Derby at one distance, and then the next race is shorter than that distance, and then you go long again. I mean, it would seem like if there were any kind of real deliberate thinking about it, the distances would progress, not regress, and then succeed again. The Belmont was not even one run at Belmont Park the first year. The first 12 runnings of it were run at Jerome Park in the Bronx. The race was conceived to be 12 furlongs, but Jerome Park had a really funky layout again. So it's the sort of thing that we're facing at Saratoga, like the track doesn't, the track configuration doesn't suit the desired distance. So that was run actually at a mile and 5/8. I think people would prefer that for next year rather than going shorter. It was also run at Morris Park. I mean, it wasn't even run at Belmont's mile and a half oval until the race was, like, you know, roughly 30 years old.
And the Preakness has been run in New York several times, and of course now at Pimlico, but and also was run, at least one of the Triple Crown winners won the Preakness first, right, and then the Derby.
Yes. Well, and there was one day back in 1890 when both the Preakness and the Belmont were held at Morris Park. They were both held on the same day.
No Triple Crown winner that year.
No Triple Crown winner that year. Yeah, Gallon Fox won the Preakness first. And the Derby was 1 week later, and then the Belmont 3 weeks after that.
Talking with Teresa Gennaro about the configuration of the Triple Crown. Teresa wrote a really good article on theracingbiz.com. I recommend to people called, let me just find that title, Reconfigure Triple Crown, a Tradition of Its Own. And you make the point in there, Teresa, that in fact, as you were just sort of outlining all these changes that have happened, in fact, more of the horses that we consider Triple Crown winners won when the race, the series was configured differently from how it is today than have won it in this configuration.
Yeah. Only the last five horses going back to Secretariat have won it in the current configuration. The other eight of them won it in various other, you know, either at a different track or at a different distance or a different spacing. So, yeah, I mean, and look, I'm as much of a traditionalist as anyone. You know, I still haven't gotten over the fact that Naira moved the Met Mile from Memorial Day to the day of the Belmont Stakes. Although, you know, full disclosure, when I researched that, you know, the Met Mile had only started being run on Memorial Day in like the 60s. I like things in horse racing to stay the same because in other sports, you know, Frank, you and I are both Rangers fans. You know, the players on the Rangers, the coaches on
Much
the Rangers.
Much to our chagrin.
Yes, exactly. Let's go Rangers. you know, the players come and go and the coaches come and go, but what we have is that brand. We have that sweater that we continue to root for year after year. And horse racing doesn't have anything like that. And certainly given that horses' careers now are so short, 2 years, you know, maybe if we're lucky, that these races that have been around for such a long time, it seems like that's an element of marketing that could be drawn on. I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, the power of the Jockey Club Gold Cup is ever going to achieve the power of a certain, you know, sports team and brand and logo. But that continuity and consistency is something that I really, really like about the sport and the fact that it has got that, you know, it's really the oldest sport in the country. On the other hand, it may simply be, you know, that the, you know, these races began being run 150 or so years ago. The argument I think could be made that it's ridiculous to think that they will remain what they are now. Everything else in the racing landscape has changed. And I'm not advocating for a change in anything about the Triple Crown, but I think we have to be open-minded about it.
Well, I'm curious as to kind of where you land then. I mean, are you the proposed change in the Belmont distance is at least currently being sold as just a temporary thing to accommodate other necessary renovations to Belmont Park. I guess I'm wondering, you know, are you concerned about that? Are you good with it?
I'm good with it. I mean, I do think that with some creativity, they probably could run a mile and a half at Saratoga. Like I said, you know, futz with the finish line, futz at the start. I think you could probably do it. But I don't think this is also a done deal. I think it's a done deal that the Belmont will be here, but I think those other details have not been fully decided, and I'm relying, you know, here are my sources, David Grenning and the Daily Racing Forum, who wrote about this a few days. And I believe in the headline of his story, it was something about the distance may be changed, that the distance may be changed. So I think it's possible that, you know, this might not happen at all. But if it does, you know, I was a little bummed during the COVID year, during 2020.
We're not that old.
In 2020 when it was shortened. But I'm also, like, I think it's fine. I think it's fine. I mean, again, I think relying on things I've heard and things I've read, that Belmont Park will continue to have a mile and a half racetrack. And it would seem really weird to me that you would spend millions and millions of dollars to renovate a track, keep this incredibly anachronistic and unusual track configuration, and then not run your signature race at that distance. Like, I mean, it's true. It's true. Decision makers in horse racing can sometimes make incomprehensible decisions, but but I think I trust them on this one.
Now, where do you fall on the proposed change of dates, which seems less likely to actually happen?
Well, you know, what I hear people objecting to is, you know, well, if we change it, it will, you know, breeders will have even less incentive to breed for stamina. Well, A, they're not breeding for stamina. I mean, the Triple Crown, as we said, has been what it is for like the last 50 years. And, you know, the possibility of a Triple Crown winner or a Belmont Stakes winner is not what is driving breeding. Of course, everybody wants that. But, you know, we've had generations to breed for stamina and nobody has done it. So number one, I don't think that changing the Triple Crown will change anything about the U.S. breeding industry. And two, I mean, we would both probably be dead even if the breeding industry did change in order for those genetic transformations to have any significant effect on the racing landscape. I mean, you're not gonna get, you know, forego in two generations.
Right. There's no Kelso coming around the corner. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. No, for sure. All right. Interesting stuff. It's going to be interesting. And I know you're an aqueduct lover. Are you a little, also a Saratoga lover, of course, but were you kind of hoping for aqueduct to get the nod?
Totally. Oh my God. Yes. I mean, it's been run there. For the last time Belmont Park was renovated, from 1963 to 1967, the Belmont was run at Aqueduct, you know, but that's when Aqueduct had, you know, a Belmont Park like grandstand and clubhouse, you know, 1960s brutalist architecture, huge, huge scale. With the casino, you know, there's just not a lot of room there anymore, but oh my God, I would be thrilled to see a Belmont Stakes at Aqueduct. I would love it. And I do think it could be done, right? You just build a lot of like temporary stuff around it. But NYRA has ceded some of the land to other entities, you know, so even like the, you know, there was this huge parking lot and I believe that they no longer have access to a good bit of it, which is a place where one might have been able to build some temporary hospitality and seating. But like to be able to take the A train to get on the New York City subway to get to the Belmont Stakes, I mean, yes, please
sign you up.
If it was good enough for the Pope, it's good enough for the Belmont Stakes. The Pope went to Aqueduct. I think it was in the 80s, John Paul II. He said mass at Aqueduct.
And who needs more praying than horse players, right?
Amen to that.
All right. On that note, we will sign off. Teresa Gennaro, thank you so much for joining me here on Off to the Races and chatting about the many faces of the Triple Crown.
Thanks, Frank.
That was Teresa Gennaro. Helpful reminder there that kind of new configurations for the Triple Crown series are the oldest Triple Crown tradition of them all and much older than the current configuration that we take as many of us take as sort of handed down from on high and written in stone, but history tells us that is certainly not the case. And the future may also tell us that that's not the case because there are proposals, of course, in Maryland to lengthen the distance, the time between the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness, and they're in New York. They're going to run a couple of them at Saratoga, it looks like, and they may be at a shorter distance. So some change may be coming to the Triple Crown, and it may be coming sooner than later, returning us to a long-term tradition. Still to come on today's show, going to have Legal Matters with Richard Hackerman coming up a little bit past the halfway point of the program. And we're going to have Dave Rodman, Maryland track announcer, in with a recap on Timonium, and also looking ahead, three stakes Sunday at Pimlico. On Sunday's card, they got the Sensible Lady Turf Dash, which is a terrific handicapping horse race, and it should be a really good horse race as well. They also have the Polynesian Stakes for older boys going two turns, and the Chaladon, which is a sprint race. So all still to come on today's Off to the Races. But let's turn our attention. We talk occasionally with Nick Hahn about what's going on at Colonial Downs. Wanted to bring in this time Jason Beam. Jason Beam, the track announcer at Colonial, has been since that track resumed operations in 2019. Just talked to him about kind of the vibe at Colonial, and also a little bit of chatter about the stakes card happening this afternoon at Colonial. It is closing day there, and it is also their second biggest day of the meet, topped by the Grade 3 Virginia Derby. Here's my conversation with Jason Beam. Jason, good morning. Thanks for joining me here on Off to the Races. We're winding it down at Colonial. How's the meet gone? How's the transition to weekend racing been treating you guys?
It's been great. The schedule was actually really good for me personally, so I probably look at it through maybe a little bit of a different lens, just because it runs opposite of my podcast schedule, and so it worked out good in that sense. I did lose my weekends, because I had 3-day weekends here last year, so I got to travel a lot more, but it's been really good. It's fun having more people on track, especially on the Saturday cards, and obviously Arlington Million Day was really, really great, but handle's been pretty strong, and it kind of continues to grow. Horse players are such creatures of habit, and I think it just takes a little while to kind of find your spot, or not find your spot, but I do think we're finding it here, and I think the weekends is going to be a good thing moving forward.
Yeah, I was down there, as you know, for Arlington Million, and it's kind of cool. I mean, the way things come together, and you end up getting a couple of grade ones on the calendar is a pretty nice addition.
Yeah, I mean, it was obviously strange just given the circumstances of it. And, you know, I expected some blowback as we were promoting the race. And there was, but nobody was like mean about it. They're just like, you know, this is our race in Chicago. And I was like, I get it, dude. I've lost tracks in my life, too, and it sucks. But yeah. I do think Colonial will be a really, really good long-term fit for those races. The course is obviously incredible. And, you know, certainly the Million itself was well supported at the entry box. And, yeah, it was just strange. It was good, but it was strange.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I was fortunate enough to get to the Arlington Million a couple times at Arlington Park, which really is the nicest racetrack that was built in America in at least 50 years. And so it was sad to lose it, but it is good to see the races continue at any rate. So I did want to ask you guys, you have, you know, we just came off the end of the Timonium meet, which is kind of blink and you missed it. And it's always, you sort of look forward to it because it's sort of fun and quirky, and then it's gone. And, you know, it's there's very much a sense of sort of beginning and ending of it.
Sure.
And, what is it like? Your meet, the Colonial meet, is 27 days this year, and it'll probably be a little bit longer and a little bit longer in years going forward. But what is that vibe like as you sort of get towards the end of the meet?
It's kind of, I was going to write a piece about this for my season wrap up for Twin Spires, because every year at Colonial, this is my fifth season, and every season, at least for me personally, has been very, very different. Whether it's, you know, working for different people, having different, you know, television co-hosts, or, you know, COVID or whatever, like they've all just had very distinct kind of feelings. You know, that first season was just 5 weeks, and it was like, you know, the first week it's all new, it's all scary, it's all exciting, it's all those things. And then all of a sudden it's like week three's done, Virginia Derby, and then you're out. And so that first year was just so quick. And honestly, the last couple of years have felt like they went quicker as well. 2021 seemed like it took a long time, but it's kind of that same thing. It's just played out a little bit longer and similar to Saratoga, right? Like everybody talks about, the best description I heard someone say about Saratoga is it's the longest fast 8 weeks of your life. And there's a little of that here, but probably not quite that much. They're definitely, as you were saying with Timonium, like there's a strong beginning, but there is a bit of a middle now. You know, Tampa, it's like, you know, the first couple of weeks go by and then you settle in for a long 4 or 5 months. And
right.
Here that's not the case. And, you know, like I said, the way with the million being kind of smack dab in the middle, to me this year felt a little bit more like pre-million, post-million.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's an interesting point you make about having a middle because, you know, at Timonium, it's opening weekend and then it's closing weekend, and there's no middle. But you guys do have one. Now, let's talk a little bit about the races Saturday, the Virginia Derby, which always used to be kind of the focus of the meet, and now is not quite that, but it comes up really strong. And you're talking about Million Day, you get the Secretariat winner back in the Virginia Derby, which I got to believe is exactly what the racing office was hoping would happen. What do you make of the Virginia Derby?
Yeah, I would think so. And the fact that Higante is a Virginia bred, I think, makes his story kind of all the more exciting. It's been a very chilly meet for Steve Aspison. His horses just have not been running here. I mean, I think he's got 3 wins now from about 40 starts, but only 1 or 2 seconds as well. So, and Higante, obviously, one of those wins. He's not going to be 22-1. We know that. I would think, though, he might not be second or third choice, though. I think he might be third choice or higher. The Chad horse on the outside, I think, is definitely going to be the favorite program trading. I think getting a grade one winner from Chad Brown is a big thing for the race. And, you know, I kind of whine a fair bit about a lot of these short fields and some of these bigger races. And you know, Chad is one of those connections who sometimes can monopolize a race, but I don't think he's done that here. I think his horse is a deserving favorite, but I don't think he's a layup by any means.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree with you on that. There's a couple other nice horses here. I mean, Mondego was third beat a length in the Belmont Derby. And obviously Higante, you mentioned. I want to ask you about Higante. So that is the Spanish pronunciation.
That's what I've been going with, and nobody's called me to correct me. So I'm sticking with that. Yeah.
Now, let's talk about pronunciations a little bit because it is an interesting thing. When you get a name that you're not familiar with, you're not sure how it would be pronounced, what do you do?
I have kind of a three-step process. Forvo.com, cheap free plug for them, is a pronunciation website, and I go there multiple times a day. Sometimes not. Once in a while, you just get a day where you know everything. But I would say I go there at least a couple times a week, and they'll give you the audio pronunciations, but they'll give it to you in various languages. So it'll be like, you know, a female from Chile pronouncing it along with, you know, maybe in America. Sometimes they pronounce it different depending on where you're at. And so I'll do that first if I don't know. The other thing is if the horse has already ran before and it's somebody I trust here, a lot of our horses have ran at Laurel. And so I always think Dave does that work as well. So I will often mimic whatever Dave says. And, you know, and not to throw any colleagues under the bus, but there's some guys I don't trust with some foreign languages. So,
right.
You know, but the other thing is if I have any connection to the trainer, I'll call them or text them or DM them, you know, and some of them are really good about doing it proactively. I always really appreciate that because, you know, there's just some times where it's maybe not pronounced as you would think it would be. You know, Kelsey Danner's good about that at this meet. She's messaged me a couple times with horses. And the best one was she had one on Million Day that was a maiden horse who won at 45-1. It was named Mo Fox Given. And she messaged me. She's like, just so you know, it's like this. I go, yeah, I could put 2 and 2 together on what that one was supposed to be. But then after the race, she goes, see, that's why I wanted you to be ready. And I'm like, you knew this thing was going to win at 45-1.
And you didn't tell your friendly announcer.
I mean, she kind of did, but I guess I didn't take it as literal. But No, though, it's actually a really fun part of this job because you get to kind of, there's a lot of times they're named after geographic places or characters in history, and you kind of get to learn little stuff. Like we have one in one of the jump races this week named Thomond Park, who it's spelled like T-H-O-M-A-N-D, so it could be Thomond or Thomond or whatever. And I looked it up, and it's like a rugby stadium in Ireland is Thomond Park. Wow. And so, like, you know, you just learn little facts like that, and it's kind of a fun part of the job.
Yeah, now the first horse I ever claimed was named for a valley in Afghanistan where the Mujahideen had held off the Soviets.
There you go.
Yeah, and it was one of those, like, what do we do with this name?
we had one at River Downs that was C-A-S-A-K-A-B-E. And I was like, Casacabe, Casacab, you know what? How do you? So first race I call, and then the owners call me, they're like, oh, you said it wrong. I was like, well, yes. Because it wasn't a word. She said it was the first two initials from each of her and her three sisters' names. So it was like Cammy, Kathy, Betty, whatever. And it was, she's like, it's Kasakabe. And I go, well, how on earth was I going to know that? It's not a word. So I appreciated her calling after the fact. But yeah,
go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, sometimes you can tell the owners are literally just trying to mess with the announcers with some of the names. And I actually kind of like the sport of that.
Yes, there have been several horses, I think at least three now running in Maryland named Buck and something.
Great,
Buck and Lucky. And I think they're hoping for a Dave Rodman to, you know, misstep on one of them.
Oh, believe but me, when Mo Fox Given took over at the top of the stretch, I was like, okay, here we go. Let's hope we're employed in 24 seconds.
One of the funniest moments I saw, years ago, there was a horse that won at Laurel. I think it won or finished second anyway. It ran well. So it got multiple calls. And Dave apparently had mispronounced it because the owner was standing on the track apron screaming up at the announcer's booth and shaking his fist that it's pronounced this way.
That's so funny.
So, anyway. Talking with Jason Beam, track announcer at Colonial Downs, closing day at Colonial today, Saturday, Virginia Derby on tap. Let's talk about the Oaks for a minute. Jason, seems like it runs right through Mission of Joy for Graham Motion. Do you have anything clever that you would do in this spot?
Because the two that are probably going to be the top two in the wagering, and I know they are in the morning line, Mission of Joy and Alpha Bella, they're both drawing the outside, but they kind of battled down the stretch in the Florida Oaks down at Tampa. And so I remember when I saw both their names, I was like, I know, I feel like I've called both these horses, and sure enough. And Mission of Joy's just turned into a really, really nice horse. You know, obviously with Kentucky Downs running, we're not going to get a ton of the top jocks coming over. I know Jose Ortiz is coming over, but a lot of them are going to, you know, be over there. And so Tyler, I'm sure, is one of those, but gets Antonio Gallardo, who was on board for the Florida Oaks. As far as getting clever in that race, I kind of struggled with it because both the Chad horses, I don't kind of look like his top stock for that particular division. They kind of look more like maybe up and comers. And would I be surprised if one of them popped up and ran a big one? No. I'm a little bit interested to see what Tafani does, the Virginia bred for Mike Stidham. Just after the bad debut, has been ultra consistent, but obviously he's been running in a little less company. These are deeper waters, but you know, still looks like kind of a nice horse who's a little bit versatile too.
Yeah. Now that'll be interesting to see. Forrest Boyce aboard there, multiple time winner of the Virginia Oaks, including back in 2013, the last day of live racing at Colonial Downs until it reopened in 2019.
I think she might have won the first Virginia Oaks that I called, the Jace of Solitude, the reopening one. Was that her? We'll have to look that one up.
I don't know. Yeah, we'll have to check that out.
I wanted to say it was.
Now, I guess our exit question here going to be, these two-year-old races, man, these are a puzzle, and I think handicappers, they're either going to hate it because there's not a lot of established form, or they're going to love it because you can do a lot of stuff with sort of pedigree and horses coming from all over the place. What are you looking for out of the two-year-old races?
I think in the Rosie Stakes, I think a lot of people are going to single No Name Mets. Just being the bigger name, running at Ascot, coming back and winning the Tyro. The horse has already won two stakes races and done so in wire-to-wire fashion. And I think it's just – but there's other speed in here. I mean, it's a two-year-old sprint turf race. Like, there's going to be a lot of speed in this kind of race. But I do think a lot of people are going to make stands there. And obviously with Alex Bregman and the ownership group, I mean, the horse is just going to have a lot of kind of notoriety. They also paid $1 million for the horse, which helps. So I do think a lot of people are going to make a stand there. If that horse wins, I think that one and Mission of Joy are probably the two biggest singles in the sequence. The race before that, though, the Kitten's Joy Stakes, I think is a lot tougher. It's a route of ground. Ton of lightly raced horse. There's a random Todd Furster that they paid $350,000 showing up for Rapoli Stables. And so that one to me was the one that was, I thought, maybe the bigger of the puzzles, just because I think No Name Mets is going to be very, very tough. But, I was looking at the two-year-old races at Del Mar for Saturday, too, and, like, you know, these two-year-old stakes going long, like, there's just so much that can happen. And so you'll see horses enter that maybe are still maidens or have gotten beat a couple times already, but you almost can't toss them because, like, everything is going to change.
You're right. These horses, they jump up all of a sudden on you, and you're like, yeah. Where'd he come from? So, all right, Jason Beam, we'll let you go. Thank you so much for joining us here on Off to the Races, and good luck with today's Virginia Derby Day calls, and congratulations on another successful season.
I appreciate it, Frank. Good to catch up with you, man.
That was Colonial Downs track announcer Jason Beam. Colonial's closing day is today, Virginia Derby, the Grade 3 Virginia Derby, the feature, post time, 1:30 p.m. in New Kent, Virginia. All right, still to come, Dave Rodman, the Maryland Jockey Club and Timonium track announcer, going to join us to close up the show. But right now, really, really interesting legal case emerged maybe a week or two ago. So there was some news coverage of it. Interesting and unusual and in some ways disturbing ruling from a judge. And who better to reach out to than our good friend of the show, Richard Hackerman. RichardHackerman.com is the website. And as he frequently does, he joins us now for Legal Matters with Richard Hackerman.
Richard, good morning. Thanks for joining me on Off to the Races. Pretty interesting case came up recently having to do with losses claimed in a horse racing quote-unquote business. Why don't you tell us what's going on there?
Thank you. Thank you, Frank. Good morning to you. There was a case of Joseph and Elaine Bucci against the IRS where Mr. Bucci, a wealthy salt mine owner, was deducting losses, which most horse owners have, you know, for several years, and his losses were denied. And one of the factors that the court looked at, I mean, they're always going to look at, you know, are you conducting the business for profit? But one of the things that this judge focused in on is what did Mr. Bucci do with his retired horses? And he made a comment which offended a lot of horse owners, me included, which basically says that although some assets appreciate over time and should be kept, racehorses, when they're done, other than Secretariat and a few others, depreciate. And while it's understandable that Mr. Bucci may want to keep his horses, they're beautiful to look at, they have no real value, and if he was really in it for a profit-making motive, he would send his horses to slaughter or glue factories up in Canada. And, you know, in the judge's view, that was a major factor, which wherein he concluded that Mr. Bucci was not operating his business for profit.
Ouch. So send them to the glue factory. I thought we were kind of done with that era. And in horse racing, there are still horses that end up at slaughter and whatnot. But in general, sort of the industry has agreed that's a bad thing. What is
the industry has agreed it's a bad thing. I'm sorry.
What is this decision going to mean for ordinary horse owners going forward?
Well, I don't think that's a good decision for even a basic economic reason. If you or I decide to send our horses to slaughter, the Maryland Jockey Club and all the racing associations in the area, if not in the country, will, one, take away our stalls, and two, may not let us run, you know, run our horses on their grounds. So really, it's a poor decision, because economically, it's not just a moral and decent thing to do to make sure your horses end up in a good home. Economically, it's nothing that can be done anymore if you want to operate a horse show racing business for profit. But there is a lesson, so, you know, and the lesson. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Frank.
No, that's what I was going to ask. What is the lesson? If it's you, to you or me, what should I take away? What should I do here?
You need to operate your business in an attempt to make a profit. And the IRS looks at, you know, various factors. You know, if they're judging whether or not this is a hobby or a business, and there are a variety of factors they look at. One is the general question: are you conducting the business in a business-like manner? Are you hiring experts? Are you keeping business records? Are you hiring decent people, you know, to assist you with your business? What is your expertise? How much time do you spend actually engaged in the business? Is there a real expectation that you'll make money, or your horses will increase in value? What has been your success in this business or similar businesses? I mean, do you ever make a profit? I mean, clearly it's going to help if some years you're going to show a profit. And what is your financial status? So if you have a huge income doing something else, and you're deducting horse racing losses each year against your regular business income, that's a factor that, you know, could work against you. And, you know, the IRS also looks at whether or not this is something you're simply doing for personal pleasure or recreation. So the lesson is to keep good records, hire good people, and really try to make a profit in the business.
All right, we'll leave it right there. Interesting case there. Richard Hackerman says, keep good records, hire experts, and do your best to make a profit, and that'll keep you on the right side with the IRS. Richard, thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Frank.
Interesting stuff there, an interesting case. You do have to wonder if there may be more to come, more to hear on this story, maybe an appeal or other developments, but good stuff there from Richard Hackerman, richardhackerman.com, the website. We've reached the final segment. We're inside the eighth pole here on Off to the Races Radio. Racing in Timonium concluded this past Monday, Labor Day Monday, with a 9-race card and a handle way up and other good developments. It was a productive meet at the Big T, the Maryland State Fair meet in Timonium, and now racing in Maryland heads to Pimlico for a brief 9-day stand. And wanted to talk with track announcer Dave Rodman about what he saw and experienced at the Big T and get his thoughts on three stakes on Sunday at Pimlico as racing resumes at Old Hilltop, 9 days at Old Hilltop before they head to Laurel for Maryland Million and more. So here's my conversation with Dave Rodman. Dave, thanks for joining me here on Off to the Races. I appreciate you making the time, and I especially appreciate you carrying me through 7 days of the Big T today at Timonium.
The Big T today, it's a show that everybody was watching. According to the handle at the Timonium meet, up huge each and every day. So they must have been taking those picks and crossing them out and saying, well, I'm playing the other horses, and they did quite well.
I know who not to use.
At least my picks, right? It was a tough meet, but I'll tell you, the racing was very competitive for Timonium. I mean, you know, we can run only a limited amount of horses because of the bull race. But there were four horses that legitimately had a chance to win. And I think it's reflected in the fact that people were betting a little more on those types of really, really tough races to handicap.
No, I agree. I mean, you said they were going to cross out your picks, and for the most part, that's what they could have done to mine as well. So there were a bunch of really good races. We talked offline about Dat's Mr. Mo and Sizzling Time hooking up. I mean, that was as good a race you're going to see anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, we've had a lot of good races at Timonium over the years. That's probably, in recent years, the most exciting and thrilling finish and the longest photo finish I think the Connections had to endure at Timonium that I've seen in quite a while. As the replays were done down the stretch over and over from different angles, each of the Connections was excited, thinking that they had won the race. But after all was said and done, it turned into a dead heat between That's Mr. Mo and It's Sizzling Time. Two very nice horses. That's Mr. Mo on the upswing for the Jerry Robb barn. And It's Sizzling Time from a small barn that gets a lot of results, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. I think That's Mr. Mo in particular is one I want to keep an eye on going forward because the way that race developed, you know, he was sort of up on the pace, which got completely blown up when Plot the Dots came rushing up to go to the front and that he stayed on in just a lengthy, lengthy duel with Sizzling Time that kind of caught my eye.
Yeah, I kind of blew him off after what I thought was an easy trip in a tough field. Laurel, to me, didn't fire when he had won his previous race. And I thought he had an easy trip up the inside and, oh, he's never going to duplicate that again. But not only that, but he was still a lot of pressure and dug in to win. So I think the buyer number of that race was like a 77-78, which was not huge, but still another upswing, I think, for That's Mr. Mo, a horse who's coming around and he doesn't mind the long distance at Timonium with the three turns, and he's one going seven furlongs at Laurel. So he has quite a bit of versatility.
Are there any other takeaways for you from the meet at Timonium?
Well, the thing I look at Timonium for is maybe to catch some under-the-radar two-year-olds. Many people will look at past performances coming out of Timonium and see some of the two-year-old first-time starters going four furlongs, dismiss the race, maybe because of a bad running line. But, you know, if you get into a little bit of trouble in the race or maybe you're a bit green, there's a bit of upside to a few two-year-olds, and I have three of them written down that I'm going to follow. One of them is Connectamundo, one of my great picks that I think he ran third, actually. He was by a great debut runner and a barn that does well with debut runners. And I thought he ran a winning race, maybe a little bit green in there. Connectamundo, son of Connect. There's another horse that I think is flying way below the radar, who was antsy in the post parade and had a very wide trip called In the Dance. You might want to put down on your stable mail. And then one in particular, which I thought was my best play of the Timonium meet on the final race of the day on Labor Day, Monday, he couldn't lose. And his name was Buckin' Dreamer. Great pedigree on him to win first out of a nice dam. But he broke through the gate prior to the start. Didn't get very far. Outrider corralled him, brought him back behind the gate, was given the okay to kind of go. And then just didn't fire. The lone speed in the race. I think it was the odds-on favorite won it. I forgot the horse's name. But, you know, when you're left for dead like that after all of that and his antics at the gate, you know, you're really, really, really up against it. And he was. And he never really fired close to his even best shot in the race. So I think Buckin' Dreamer is going to be one to watch down the line. Those are three. And I guess if you go back at the replays, you could probably get a couple of more. But I just try to concentrate on the young horses because some of those will be stretching out in the next few weeks to longer distances at Laurel Park.
You're exactly right about that. Hammy Smith, who had one of the runners in the last race of the meet, told me prior to the race that he liked his horse okay, but probably not going four furlongs, which is what they were doing. He'll be looking for a little bit more ground for that one.
Yes,
so.
And speaking of Hammy Smith, another horse that I kind of got, I think it was the Sizzling Time That's Mr. Mo race, was it? Feeling Woozy, didn't he run third? Was he in there? But he
he kind of was wrangled back a little bit off the pace after a trouble trip at Laurel in a stake. And I think he's a little bit better horse than that. He's obviously, he's shown flashes of talent in the past. So that's one of maybe the older ones I'm watching out after feeling.
Talking with Dave Rodman, Maryland track announcer. Dave, let's turn our attention. We got three stakes at Pimlico today, and two of them are going to make your job easy because they have small fields, but the other one going to make up for it. That's the Sensible Lady Turf Dash. Let's talk about that a minute. Got a whole bunch of fillies and mares in there, and a couple of them pretty nice horses, including three that are coming off last out stakes wins.
Now, you look at the race on paper, and you see a lot of fillies and mares that have the 1-1-1. They love to run up front. A lot of speed in here. So if the race stays fully intact, I think you're going to see quite the battle up front of the speed horses. One of them won five races this year. All that magic, a fast Anna filly, is very, very fast. Has shown the ability to withstand a quick pace. And perhaps even stalk a little bit as she did at Penn National back in June. She's the speed horses. Brad Cox, though, I think it's going to be awful tough to beat on a congrats mare called Going Good for Klein Racing. A good second two races back and at Indiana Downs. Shall I say it? Shall I say it? In a race that
yes.
was 7 points above. Yes, 7 points above Dog Fig Par.
Dog
yeah, some speed. Yeah, that's a proprietary algorithmic formula that I use that oftentimes.
I understand it involves derivatives,
yeah.
doesn't it?
Yeah, derivatives, but nothing to do with Bitcoin. anyway, it's just my little speed figure thing that I do. I had to come up with a name for it, so Rod Dog Dog Fix. She's kind of a sensible mare and a sensible lady. Who can withstand good company up front and has a little bit of kick in the stretch. I think she's the one to beat. The intriguing mare to me is, will she run? Will she scratch? Self-isolation, right? I mean, she was scratched out of a stake at Timonium. Wasn't she the mare that does scratched out of the distaff? Yeah.
Yes,
David Jacobson.
Yep.
And scratched in New York. In New York as MTO when the race remained on the turf the day before the Timonium Distaff. Yet now, well, maybe they're thinking the race is going to come off the grass. There is some chance of rain. She's in good form in the dirt right now, but she's a two-time turf winner. And if you go back to her way back form, which was in California, that she's fast enough to compete with these horses. She's shown flashes of brilliance with good stretch kick in the last, since May, really, at Monmouth Park. She's won three out of her last four. She's intriguing in the fact that she's been scratched a lot, but she is a turf winner, and there's a lot of speed in here. And maybe they just wanted to give her a little bit more time. She hasn't raced since August. Six, so maybe they thought she needed a little bit more time for recovery.
Now, she is an interesting one, and as you say, a lot of speed in there. A lot of ways to go. That's a good race.
Yeah, that's a tough
one. Of the dirt races, Dave, I think the Polynesian, they both have short fields. I think the Polynesian, a more interesting race, got a couple of stakes winners in there as well, including grade two winner Double Crown, Be Better for Brittany Russell. And I think the most interesting horse here is Unoho, who was on the Derby trail, won the Rebel a couple of last year, and then things kind of went sideways for him.
Yeah, that was his claim to fame, a 75-1 upset in the Rebel at Oaklawn Park. But looking at that race, in way back retrospect, I mean, what's really been out of there except for Ethereal Road to come back and run well? I mean, I think there was one winner who won next time out who's still stuck at a non-winners of three level. Now, he's going to get a lot of play because it's Linda Rice Barn, and he ran well up at Saratoga for Bill Walden when finishing second to Olympic Dreams, but they were well clear in a okay, moderate kind of New York bred field. I think people are going to be dazzled by that number. I'm not really sold on him to come back and run that 96 buyer number. I am sold on another horse that's run a 96 buyer in his last and who's won three in a row, and that's Be Better from Rapoli Stable and Brittany Russell.
Yeah, this horse in good form and had to run down Nimitz Class last time out. Nimitz Class had kind of been the category killer of these older horses going two turns.
Yeah, and he's able to settle from off the pace. He caught my eye back in May at Pimlico. He's running at Pimlico, obviously, this weekend when he beat a veteran, Iwan. And just the way he did it led me to believe he had a little something left in the tank. And he came back. He won again at Laurel. Doesn't have to have his racetrack with him there. And then he came back to win the deputed testimony when running down Nimitz Class, who arguably, you know, he's won so many stakes and triple-digit buyer numbers, but maybe he caught the not 100% Nimitz Class that day. But still, he's a horse who's got a lot of stretch kick, doesn't need a real quick pace in front of him. You see his last three races, the opening quarter, 24, and the deputed testimony, it wasn't a sizzling pace either.
Nope.
In a short field, and he managed to win going away. He was just kind of getting into gear that last 16th of a mile. Uncle Mokolt has really got plenty of potential here, and he did win his last without Lasix, and of course, no runners on Lasix in the stakes, so that's something else going for him too. Don't know what kind of price he's going to be. And then looking down the field, I said, wow, Zabra Cadabra, what's he done at Pimlico? Certainly he's run here. No?
No.
I can't believe he's never run at Pimlico. So, yeah, he likes Laurel. He likes that one-turn mile there. He's a very rateable type horse. And he'll get his regular rider, Carlos Lopez, back aboard. And even though the one-turn miles were effective, how is he going to be able to handle the two turns? Will he try to run away, so to speak, at some point in the race? I mean, horses like that, to me, I mean, they might put him on or near the lead in this spot, I'm just thinking.
I'm curious to see if he posts. To be honest, I think, you know, Gary Capuano and Frank Sample, the trainer and owner, they've handled him very conservatively. He's been good enough all year to run in this sort of company, and they haven't tried it once. They may look see the five horse field and go, sure, let's give it a shot, or they may look and see a horse like, you know, Be Better or Unoho, and say, man, you know, we can wait for this open allowance, and it's $70,000 and look good.
Well, I mean, Our Nation, he's traded drafts with Our Nation on Parade. And in a short field, they figure, well, if we can beat him, you know, which we've done before, I think it's scores 1-1, if I'm looking at it correctly, then, you know, maybe we do deserve a shot in this race. Double Crown, has he run somewhere? Yeah, but has he run somewhere since September 4th? I don't know. What's today? because he ran August 25th at Charlestown in the Charlestown Classic. They wheel him back September 4th, and then they're going to wheel him back again in the Polynesian. He's going to need a really, really, really good pace in front of him, you know, or maybe a complete reversal to hit the winner's circle. But, you know, he's hit the board at Pimlico a couple of times. I'm just kind of taking Famous Last Words, I think that Unoho is going to take a lot of money, put it to you that way, off a 96 buyer. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm not saying he can't win, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you think you'll get better value on Be Better?
I think he's a better bet. Better is a better bet. Yeah.
It's a lot of betters.
Yeah.
All right.
He's getting better all the time.
You better, you bet.
You better, you bet. All right, Dave Rodman, thanks so much for joining me on Up to the Races. We're going to have to get going, but good luck today, and look forward to hearing your calls of the stakes of Pimlico.
Okay, Frank, have a good one. Thank you for having me on.
That'll close the books on another episode of Off to the Races Radio, powered by The Racing Biz. Thanks so much for spending a little bit of your Saturday morning with us. Thanks also to our show's supporters, including Richard Hackerman, attorney at law, the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, True Valor, standing at Northview Stallion Station, and Wanamakers.com online horse auction site. Thanks to all our guests on this week's show, which featured Dave Rodman, Jason Bean, Teresa Gennaro, and with Legal Matters, Richard Hackerman. Keep up with racing and breeding all week long on The Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. Tune in next Saturday at 10 a.m. here on Baltimore Positive to hear the independent voice for Mid-Atlantic racing and breeding. My name's Frank Vespi. Have a great week, everybody, and we'll see you in the winner's circle.